Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and we have a gem for you today where we've had so many different conversations about robots and rebar and robots and walls and robots. In fact, a lot of people we ask when they kind of say, I don't know about robots taking over the world. Well, I do know that this stuff has been happening around the globe, and a lot of this is catching on, right? So we get to go and have a conversation with a really cool company called Randec. That is, if you haven't listened to the last podcast with the guys from IWBC, go check it out, because Ola spoke at IWBC and connected us through Matt, who's going to be our guest co-host. And this is a cool part that fits into industrialized wood-based construction. And from that conference, he spoke there. And when I was getting the feedback from Matt, he said it was the best presentation of connecting the dots of putting together the robots and how this thing can work. So the main message that we want to convey to you, Tribe, is that Randec are pioneers in creating innovative automated solution for customers within the prefabricated house manufacturing industry. So they have developed and manufactured high performance machines and systems for all kinds of things like prefabrication of walls, floors, ceilings, rough trusses, cut saws, butterfly turning tables, and specialized machinery since the 1940s. And so how is this going to benefit you is that today Randec is one of the world's leading suppliers of high performance machines and complete systems for effective house manufacturing, with 90% of the production being exported from its factory in Sweden. And so my perspective is, let's continue this conversation on robots and automation to drive the construction forward. But let's bring in one of the experts who's been living in making these robotic construction and see how it can feed into the rest of the customer care wheel through the AOC master facilitators. And to do that, I want to have Matt, who's been living the design element, to bring these machines through the design from one source of truth into the perspectives of actually properly, thoughtfully getting shit done. Matt, welcome. Excited to have you back here on the co-host for this show here today.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for inviting me, Devin. Appreciate it, man. And yeah, I met Ola, in his session. He was in there with Steve Glenn of Plant Prefab and another guy named Ben Hershey with Forward Solutions. And it was indeed one of the best presentations I've ever seen at Greenbuild in San Francisco. So a couple of things I want to explore today is, one question is robotic automation one of the key silver bullets to bring the construction industry in the 21st century? And is this silver bullet really going to close the efficiency gap with other leading industries? Because as we all know, architecture, engineering, and construction is behind the times, and things have not changed much over the decades. And then the second thing I want to talk about and have us explore is, what's the perfect balance between automation and human labor? And now, do you answer the question that I know you and I have got is, not only is offsite construction going to take my job, but are those robots going to replace me, and am I going to have a job? So hopefully we can cover some of that as well. So let's go to Sweden, man.
Awesome. Well, let's get to know Ola, and I'm going to butcher this. And even though we're going to go to school with Ola Skoglund from Sweden, but we'll let him get the full name. And it's super cool. The longer you cast your net, the smaller this world of earth is for us. And we're going to go talk with their chief operating officer at Randec Robotics. Let's go have as much fun as possible. Try get to know Ola's story and talk robots and executing them to build better buildings. Lock and load. What's your favorite beverage?
My favorite beverage. Well, after a few encounters with kidney stones recently, I find myself drinking a lot of tap water, actually. But a good lager is also something I really enjoy. So.
Well, that's a good reminder. I need to be reminded that, especially as you go into the holidays here. You probably have a few too many lagers from here and there. So the balance, right? And that's what we're going to talk about, right? Having the right balance of the different things. What's the favorite place you've traveled, Ola?
One of my favorite places was in Switzerland, going skiing in the Alps, and we actually got to go in a glacier cave at the top. That was something really special that I will bear with me.
Awesome. Well, give us one story from that. Paint the picture from that experience for us.
Yeah, it was a place called Engelberg, a really nice off-piste skiing resort. One of the only places that has this rotating lift that you go in up to the top. Really good, nice restaurant on the top. And you could walk away to these glacier caves and look into them. And we were there with my former company, and it was a really nice trip, actually. So, wonderful time.
And so what's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos? We're going to talk about breaking down about how robots fit into this crazy world of construction and moving it forward that we passionately call the art of construction.
Well, of course, time with family. I have two kids, two boys. Well, enjoy spending time with playing some golf or downhill skiing, or maybe just cruising with my eldest son in our Chrysler big block convertible from 68.
Awesome. All right. Well, we got to know a little bit about Ola. Tell us, your full name and the right Swedish accent, and what is your story that led you to becoming the chief operating officer for Randex Robotic Division?
Well, my name is Ola Skoglund. And I'm, as you said, the chief operating officer for the robotics division at Randex. So one of two big factories in Sweden. I started out as a mechanical engineer, actually, designing automation machines, special machines, lines, stuff like that, robotics for a lot of car companies, you could say, car industry automation. So I did like 16 years in that automation type before I went to this company. So that's kind of, and a lot of my colleagues also bring that to the table. So we have our background, our DNA is from automotive. But this company also worked a lot with wood in different forms. So we kind of knitted that together into something that's turned out to be pretty successful. So that was my start. I then went on to product management, mainly focused on product development and automation. And I started at this company in 2013. And I was asked to lead the production unit in 2018. So since then, I'm trying to keep this all together and trying to stay innovative and keep our unit churning out new inventions and new problem-solving machines for problems that the business have. And I've done 25 years now in automation. I can't really see myself doing anything else. It's too much fun. So that's my background.
Awesome. Well, can you give us some of the history of Randex to paint the picture? Because I've never heard of Randex before, and I'm sure there's a few others out there listening to the podcast.
Yeah, Randex, a company very well known in this business. Started back in the 40s, really started taking off with offsite construction machinery in the 60s. As you mentioned earlier, a lot of firsts, one of the first butterflies tables. First CAD control line was actually done by Randex in 1985. I imagine I probably was playing with my Commodore 64 at the time. It's kind of controlling control software that also. A lot of other innovations leading up to the introduction of the actual industrial robots into these businesses. So it's been a focus for this company to work with offsite and to work with customers all over the world. So that's something we really, really like to do and try to always stay ahead and innovate and try to see what the problems are and try to address them in the most effective way. Not just throw equipment and stuff at them, but really, really come up with the clever solutions.
So, Ola, you mentioned automotive industry, and that seems to be something we've heard quite a bit about when we've talked to people on previous podcasts. Is there's always this analogy that people try to draw between the automotive industry and architecture, engineering, and construction, and robotics with that specifically, and how the two are different but share some similarities. Mm-hmm. Can you chat a little bit about the levels of adoption of offsite construction in Sweden and Europe as a whole, and how it's really sort of led the way and why we're a little bit behind in the United States, but sort of moving along, at a more, a slower pace, but how Europe is further ahead of us right now?
Well, my opinion and what I've gathered so far in this business is that, I mean, if we're talking about Sweden, for example, Sweden is a country with a climate that really only allows for on-site construction parts of the year if you don't want to freeze really bad. So it was probably natural for Sweden to go off-site really early. And I also think that automation has always been in the Swedish DNA. I mean, Swedes as a people are quite innovative, early adopters for most things, and we rely heavily on export. So we need to be very competitive. So I think that's something that's pushed us to go for offsite to a high extent compared to others. And I think also other countries in Europe, smaller countries with different climates and I mean, it rubs off. I would say that's my best analogy. So in the US, I think it's really catching on quick. I would say the chatter I hear when I go to fairs and talk to customers and so on, the interest is huge right now for offsite, and the want from the companies to put more value into their products out of the factory is also, the interest is really high. And I think it will surely increase, and I think it needs to increase, but there will always be a bit of both. I mean, in Sweden, we have very good offsite builders also, of course, that is very important to the market. But I think we've seen the advantages with offsite solutions technology to put as much value as possible into the products and really get quick to lock up on the houses, I think.
You know, that's a good point. You know, here in Colorado, obviously with the high country, that's one of the advantages we've seen with offsite construction. On the owner construction side is that the building season is incredibly short. Mm-hmm. And so in being able to build over one season, you know, starting in the spring, put foundations in and having it dried in and completed by the end of that building season is huge. You know, I'm going to turn the focus a little bit more specific on robotic manufacturing. And so when we were in our last podcast with Art and Brendan, now, we were talking about wood and we were also talking about robotics. And one gentleman that you shared the stage with at IWBC and Greenbuild was Steve Glenn, you know, who was the CEO and owner of Plant Prefab. And they just recently completed a new factory, I think up in Tracy, California, with full robotics in that facility. So we had a little bit of a discussion with Art and Brendan about additive manufacturing, which, you know, if you look at the Wikipedia description of that, you know, it's really 3D printing or additive manufacturing is a construction of a three-dimensional object from a CAD model or digital 3D model. And so some ways that can, you know, form panelization and it can affect other construction of objects. At its most extreme, you know, you have those machines that extrude. And I think people have probably seen this on YouTube videos. It extrudes concrete and then it's laid up in layers to build an actual building envelope. But can you talk with us a little bit and educate us on how your robotic lines work and what machines you guys manufacture and then how CAD and BIM models flow through those to the actual finished product?
Yeah, of course. Our take on this whole production methodology is that we try to build an optimized machine to build components in an offsite environment. We're not trying to, I mean, we're machine builders, we're not trying to revolutionize the way the walls are built. That's not our job. We try to make the best machinery to help our customers and to help their labor. To manage to have a good work life while being efficient. So you can basically say that our machines break down the normal process of building the different elements, and we break it up into different processes, and we look at the whole process, the whole flow, and we see where we can put in automation, which is easy to achieve and maintain, and where it's most efficient. I mean, since we're talking about wood mostly, it's a live material. So everything is not suitable for automation, or at least not yet. So there still needs to be people in this, and you need to respect the skill of the workers and the people. And I think that's kind of also some of the key to our success, that we put the robots, let's just to say the robots, in the right place so far. So walls are often light frame, different sheathings, layers. If you go to Europe, you'll have closed walls with insulation. Our latest innovation, by the way, was the robotic insulation, the zero labor insulation robotic cell. It's fully automated insulation of wall elements. And then the walls are closed with pre-conduit wires or ventilation or whatever inside the walls. That's possible to do in Sweden. Maybe not in all states in the US so far. So there's a bit of a difference here in how we build in different parts of the world. So, and we're producing to over 40 parts, 40 countries. So we need to make something that kind of fits everyone.
Lots to unpack there as I cast this net, as I go all the way out to Sweden, where locally at my own house, I can't get inspectors to show up. And when they do, it's not right here in the city of Denver, Colorado. That's actually in the news about how messed up the whole thing is. But it's so refreshing. And Tribe, this is the stuff we have to talk about. This is where Steve Burrows and others have been talking about. It's the greatest time to be in construction if you're paying attention, because it has to change, right? And adapt this. And we're going to, there's lots to unpack there as we go down this conversation. But now that we're all jazzed and understand, we have somebody who's been a first in many things, but not the first since 2 years ago, since the 1940s, right? So Randy, you've been at this for a while. Tell us about who is your ideal clients and who is purchasing these robots, and is it growing in the U.S.? Because this is not the standard in the U.S.
No, it's not yet. That's a really good question, actually. The funny thing is that our customers so far are so spread apart. I mean, we have very big companies who buy these machines, but we also have small companies that are custom home builders that just want this technology. They see that it's future-proof. It allows them to get their labor, their workers to do different things in the factory, focus on flows and layouts and material planning and stuff, while the machine does the work that you really don't want to do anyway. I mean, you don't want to crawl on your knees on top of an element trying to hammer in nails or lift sheets and turn your upper body around. I mean, you have a whole working life. You have to take care of yourself. So that's really what we're trying to address. So it could be volumetric builders, it could be contract manufacturers, works for that also, or home builders. So that there's really not one single customer.
Dang it. Matt, I thought we had the silver bullet. And I really appreciate the answer from Ola to say, when I say, who is your ideal customer? And I've been going down these journeys a lot as we're launching the AOC Master Facilitators. And, you know, Scott, who's launching that thing, has really been challenging, like, who is a Master Facilitator, right? And it's like, well, anybody who's a lifelong learner, well, that's a catch-all. Well, to say there is not one ideal customer, or said another way, we're all ideal customers if you're actually going to be in the future of construction, because it's everybody. If a robot is going to augment the right person in the right seat. But to do that, you have to figure out how us humans work with the robot. So do you offer any training to your clients on using these robot lines? Because I've heard a lot about in the past exercises where we go down and have podcasts around the rise and fall of companies like Katerra and the fallout of who gets all these machines for the pennies on the dollar and what VC is this and so on and so forth. So how does that process work? Because I think we have to figure out how to create a standard operating procedure, or as Matt always talks about, the standardized kit of parts that is much easier said than done.
Yeah. So this is a long process. I mean, it's a complicated sales process from the beginning, because we as a manufacturer need to get very involved with the customer to understand what the customer's needs are, what the requirements are, and also educate the customer actually in how to buy automation often, because this business or this construction isn't used to it as some other industries. So it's all about that, specifying the machine, setting up the line that suits this specific customer. It could be set up in so many ways, I can barely imagine myself. When we get to that stage and get it sold, we start with training and talking to their designers. So, I mean, you can draw a wall in 10,000 different ways, it feels like, but you can do it with design for manufacture in a way that suits automation better. The automation still can do what you want to do with your wall, but if you do these small tweaks, you will save the production time and you will up your volume. So that's one thing. Then at installation and factory commissioning at a customer, we also have operators joining our training programs. So we train them on the actual machines on site, stay there with them and let them run it themselves and support them for that. And the same with their maintenance crews and maintenance guys. So we also educate them into, and we also invite them to join us with setting up our machines. It's a very good learning process for a maintenance guy to actually be a part of the team that installs their new nice machinery. So
Ola, you know, question for you. With Sweden, you know, I would imagine there's probably some sort of national building code and things like that. One of the strengths and weaknesses of the United States is that while we have a national building code, the IBC and the IRC, things will vary from municipality to municipality, you know, because, you know, Americans love their freedom and their choice and all that stuff. And so everybody wants to add amendments to those that are based on local conditions or preferences of the building officials. With your equipment, like, so sort of what level of customization is available based on who your customer is, you know, say based on the code of the areas that they're working in or based on the building industry type, like multifamily or hotel or whatever, what sort of customization is available with your equipment to respond to those issues?
Yeah, a lot actually. We, of course, have machinery that's more suited for North America, more suited for Europe. There are variants of everything, but all the machines are very well equipped with different type of toolings that you can use that are adapted to different markets. And sometimes we come across something that we haven't come across before. Maybe you need some extra type of glue between the sheets and the frame or something. And generally we work with the customer and try to fix a solution for that. So, I mean, we recently introduced also a gluing robot cell to actually add glue between the sheets and the frame. It was nothing we had. It was actually nothing we even had in our development plan, but it was a requirement for that customer in that particular place. And so we actually developed it on the fly, you could say, and now it's part of our program or our product program. So, I mean, that's kind of some of the charm with this job also, that you work with the customers and try to find solutions. But it's often about how tight you have to nail things, what kind of sheet you need to use if you're in a hurricane area or not, or earthquake prone area. If we're talking different climate zones, it's more what type of insulation, everything from rock wool insulation to the PIR boards or stuff like that. But machines are versatile enough to handle most of this. But everything like this needs to be specified at the beginning so you know what you're doing and how you're setting up the machines for success.
You know, it's timely that you make that comment because, you know, right now we're sitting here in December of 2022. In a huge storm just moved across the United States where it went from rains to snows to blizzards to shutting highways and schools down to tornadoes back to snowstorms again. And so, yeah, it's amazing just across our country how much weather conditions can change just based on the location. I want to turn attention to, you know, and I know a lot of our listeners follow us on LinkedIn. We see it on the comments and the likes, but one of our past guests, Gary Fleischer with the Mod Coach, has been having a discussion on one of their forums in their new magazine that they just put out recently on the modular industry. And they were talking about, you know, standardizing and even automating the home building process. And some of it being, you know, all standardized homes where they all look alike, but then also there's customization and some clients want customization. So I throw the question to you because it's been ongoing in the forum in the industry, is on an industry-wide level, how do you feel that we should balance the need to standardize and automate the home building process while still allowing customization for the creativity that architects builders and homeowners are going to want? And then what do you think, you know, what's your ultimate vision for that solution?
Well, I'm not an architect, but I'm thinking about it like this, that, I mean, I've seen a lot of beautiful engineered homes that are quite square, actually. And most homes, how unique they are and how luxurious they are, they still have the same shape of walls. It's more of what, in my opinion, it's more what the architect does with them, how they use the different wall, how they place it, how they place the stories on top of each other, how they work with volumes, colors, claddings. And the more exclusive the home, I mean, the more, for me, exclusiveness is thick insulation, because I live in Sweden and it's really cold. But I mean, it's interior, it's what kind of cladding you put on, the general look of it. I don't see it as the components are not that vastly different. It's more what you do with the whole package. So I think the key is to try to find a way to put more value into all these prefab elements to be able to produce more in factory at a efficient way, and try to get together more as a nation. Maybe I'm from Sweden, so I'm just seeing it from my perspective, it sure would be easier, I guess.
Talk about a breath of fresh air, right, Matt? As I'm sitting here, when we're talking about thinking about how do I go to my family and live, you know, my motto of being the best dad and husband I can to my family and be a mentor to my friends, right? And our partners through the AOC Master Facilitators Program. But that gets really hard when you have so many deadlines and so many bills to pay the way construction is done, right? And it all boils down to who's going to do the work. And you have to be able to be playing from the same sheet of music. So the part that this is the question I'm most passionate about asking you this question and having this conversation, because I'll raise my hand, Tribe, like it's broken and it's really hard to execute right now. And the U.S. is very, very broken in a lot of different ways about this. And the people that are living it firsthand, they know it, right? But we also see this thing of our way out of this thing, right? And so how does the adoption of your robotic systems change the type of the workforce and construction needs? As we talk about the warriors, the people bridging the gap, connecting the field to the office. So who do you think is the ideal construction worker of the future if we're living in the future as now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that foremost, we need to attract a younger workforce. I think that's true for Sweden, and that's probably true for North America and a lot of countries too. Unfortunately, I don't think construction is all that. If I would ask my son, who's 13, what's he going to be, I don't think he would say construction. Maybe because dad builds robots, but I think we need to show them that there's really good work opportunities and automation is coming in. It's drawing in the younger people. And I think they will also contribute with the IT side of things, the production and the production flows on the factories. But I think, let's not forget, we need the skilled labor that's already in the business, as well as an automation company that's never worked with wood or live materials before. Trying to build something like this from scratch will most likely fail. Setting up a factory with only automotive people and trying to build something with live materials like this without having the knowledge of our skilled workers who've doing this all the time will also likely fail, I would say. You need that kind of skill. It's a very unique skill set. And I think jobs will not disappear. We'll just create better jobs and better job opportunities and make people be able to stay longer in the construction industry. That's my hope.
You know, Devin might be able to fill this in. I just remember on one of the shows that I had the opportunity to co-host with Devin, is it someone, and it might even been Steve Burrows. Someone mentioned the fact that, you know, building your home would be equivalent to taking a BMW and having somebody deliver over a course of a few weeks the parts for that car in your driveway. And then various people would come by over the next few months and slowly put that car together, you know, which seems absolutely absurd. And Devin and I cracked up when we heard that. We're like, yeah, that's such a great analogy. Mm-hmm. That to me really spoke to what offsite construction is, right? Like, why would you build this house, you know, and have all these people running through this place when you can do it more efficiently? And that's where, you know, we feel like robotics, you know, comes in, and that's what we're broaching that subject in this discussion here. So when you look at your clients, the folks that Rendec Robotics has sold to, what sort of productivity gains have they made by using the efficiency of your robotic machines and putting the right people with the right robots in the right workflow process? What have you seen in the way, maybe even of an anecdotal story?
Yeah, I have some examples from one of the earlier lines we did, and those guys were really good at adopting the robot technology. They were super interested. The carpenters were super interested. They became operators and were so proud, and they really really still run the robotic line very well, and it contributes to the whole in the factory, the factory as a whole. But also, I mean, we need to look at the factory as a whole. The robot won't be the solution for everything. The machines won't be. You can put in the most expensive robotic line in the world. If you don't have the right material flow or setup for the factory, how you work, right? So there's a lot of things that need to tie together.
Yeah, well said, Matt. I think, you know, Steve Burrows and many other. I think Jerry from Integra, who his whole presentation, he gives the slide and shows, you know, all the parts about all the stuff dumping in your driveway. And, you know, I'm living that firsthand where you go, you're going through a whole house remodel of like, you know, the sub shows up and do you have this spark arrestor and do you have this and that? And the inspector's going to be here tomorrow. And they're like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Right. And trying to connect all these kit of parts is a really, really hard thing. And so I'm curious, you know, what is next for the future of Rendec when we talk about you've been the first on many things for since the 1940s?
Yeah, I think our mission is to continue to fill the gaps that we can see in the production flow of these kind of offsite factories. And we were always developing our concept. So if you would look at the zero labor concept, for example, today, for untrained eye, it would look pretty much the same as the first one. We added more robots and so on. But if you know what you're looking for, there's so many things that are updated and we improve as we go along. But the nice thing with it also is our approach to it, that even the guys who bought the first line can still update with all the innovations we've done. We always make sure that it's radar compatible. So our equipment is future-proof because we aim to have this robots in the factories for many, many years to come, because they can last for a long time. I mean, that's what we see with the automotive industry. They're not using them for fun, they're using them because they're a really good help to the factories for quality and safety and production.
Awesome. Well, we'll put all the information in the show notes that we kick out. And, you know, this is one that I'm excited to circle back with the AOC Master Facilitators, where we have a new program that we're launching that's titled and that we call AMAs, Ask Me Anything, where we get to have the guests come back in and have a conversation about, I love how you said maybe a subcontractor all the way to big factories maybe could put some automation in their business. But how's the best way to people getting in contact with you and learn more about what you guys are all doing?
Well, my contact information is all on our webpage at www.rendec.com. So please free to drop in there and look at our equipment and give me a call or email. So we're here.
All right, Ola. So here's the million-dollar question with the $2 million question to follow is we ask this of all of our guests that are on the show, and we've gotten, you know, multiple answers and all over the map with the answers. But what, when you look into your crystal ball for the future, what do you see for the role of technology in construction?
I think that a lot of the progress in the years to come will be on the data side, the CAD side, and how easy it is for a customer to create these beautiful homes and without too much effort, having them adapted to machinery of various sorts, automation. I think that hopefully legislation and rules make it easier for companies to make more in the factories for offsite. That will also enable a lot of more houses to be built. I mean, there will still be a lot of people on site putting it together because not everything is modular. So that will help with the housing shortage, affordable housing shortage, I think. And I think also for if we look for on site, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening there also. I mean, we have robots drawing up the layouts on the floor where they put the walls. No one needs to go with the chalk anymore before. You have robot dogs scanning the ground for deviations and variations and measuring stuff. And it's a super exciting time. So I think if we can connect all this together, we're in for a ride.
We sure are, my man. Well, Ola, the final question we always ask is we got to niche in a little bit. If we casted a big net of putting out there with what you guys are doing of this putting robots to augment this crazy passionate thing that we call the art of construction. But what do you want to leave our contractors and affiliates to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business? What is that one thing you're going to leave them to think about and go out there and think about robots and Randek and their business?
I think it's time to reach out to us or other manufacturer and start a discussion, see what's available, get a feel of what can be right for me as maybe a small manufacturer, a custom home builder, or a very big company. I mean, with the development that's been in the recent years, there's so much different machinery. So it's all about taking the step, but taking it the right step first. So being prepared, as Gary from Entekra says, also have your data straightened out, so you really know what you're doing. Listen to the machine manufacturer, work with the machine manufacturer if you're planning offsite with automation, and really use their knowledge to develop your own process as you develop. Together with them, develop machines or choose machines for your production. And I would say that offsite, I think it's going to grow. So that would be my tip.
Awesome. Ola, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. We're huge fans and honored to be able to be a small part of the big picture of how we can make construction better with using cool tools from Randek. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It was a joy.
The part that hit me right at the beginning, I think, is like, man, you know, I was born in 1980 and I should have this thing figured out by now. Well, a lot of things have happened, and they talk about how they're still the first since the 1940s. And they talk about how they needed to have, you know, the caulking applied. And I've been in multiple factories specifically of that very situation of to be able to pass the codes and show them the data of you got to attach the glue at this way because that's what the municipalities say. He said it wasn't in their roadmap, but it needed to happen. So they put that in. But yet they've been needing to do these first since the 1940s. And we talked a lot about breaking down the process and then see where automation works. Every time I get the pleasure of learning from a mentor like Ola, who comes in and says, they always talk about robots are not everything. They should not be used for everything, right? And this is where we talk about the riches and the niches of feeding in and figuring out what we talk about, having the right person in the right seat. Well, what can you automate and where robots sit, right? Because you got to think about these closed wall inspections. And these are the words that I'm living full bore right now. This is where it's really broken, right? Is you have to get adoption, but then you have to get implementation of how the adoption may change what we call the continuum of care or the customer care wheel that Matt brought to the table. And we've had some recent podcasts about that. And a whole class that you can go check out in the AOC Master Facilitators program. And then when we talked about, I challenged him and he challenged me back in a wonderful way when I'm really trying to niche in and say, who is the ideal customer for a robot? And he gave me the same answer when somebody says day to day in my window and door business, how much do windows cost? And my sales director, Gunther Kuhn, says it best. And at first it out, you have to find a way to not tick them off because they just want to know the budget number. Is a robot 5,000 or 500,000? Depends. And when you say that, it depends because it truly does freaking depends, tribe. Like that is the situation. It's never going to change. So we have to hit that head on of the psychology of the sale. And we have to be able to adapt to different markets. That's what I was so excited to be able to go to Sweden and talk with Ola. And he talks about, because I hear a lot about in the UK and different areas where this stuff is standard operating procedures. But the longer I play this game, the more I realize, man, we are proud in the US and we just want to do it our way. If you want it done right, do it yourself and just do it my way. Well, how do we build a tribe and work together? Because at the end of the day, it's data. And they say that every time, right? Because Ola, mechanical engineer, that's saying, how do you put a process into this machine to get out what you want? But I ask us all the question, what really is data? I was listening to, shout out to the contact crew of Alice Leung, where she's talking about, well, the technology is a silver bullet, but the people that are knee deep in tech construction tech right now are realizing, just like Ola said, if you only know construction or if you only know cars, you'll probably be the next Katerra, regardless of how much money you spend. And so to me, what really is data is being able to communicate the same language that the data actually is the export of communication. And this is hard, right? To educate the people that are calling the shots, because who's really calling the shots? Well, what we believe, it's the AOC master facilitators working together. So think about that and ask yourself the question, when it comes to robot, what's right for me? Well, I'm really thinking about that. And I was thinking, I'm not a big enough player to think of robots in my business. But then I stop and think, well, I actually have a robot. We have suction cup lifts and we have this and we do that. But do we have the right data management system to take that to the next level? And that's what we're launching with the AOC IT house, because how do you eat this elephant? One paradigm shift at a time. And I think that's where Ola talked about, where whatever your budget is, figure out what you can automate to break through to get to the next level. And I say, let's continue to listen to Ola and learn together. And I'm going to challenge Ola to come in and do an AMA, ask me anything, where we all come back together and think about that and challenge us to say, it's impossible to do this yourself. But if we, as he talked about, you got to listen and learn by using others, I say, let's learn and use the AOC master facilitators. That as I'm talking about this, I'm so jazzed, because Matt, I want to close it out, because you've been hearing a lot about Devin and this new thing as you've been in the business when it comes to architecture, but there's a lot of cool stuff that's right there on the horizon if we all come together. Matt, bring us home.
Yeah. So thanks for inviting me to be on this podcast, man. It's like, so I've been to Norway, but I've not been to Sweden, you know? And so it's somewhat in the same neighborhood. But it feels like I went to Sweden today and in an exciting conversation. And I really wanted to share like three things. You know, I won't call them one, two, three, but I'll call them appetizer, dinner, and dessert. So the appetizer, and it responded to one of the perspectives and takes that I wanted to get answered. And that was, you know, is this thing the silver bullet? And Ola talked about that a little bit, just how he's been 25 years in automation. But as an engineer, he really believes, hey, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel. So it's not the silver bullet, but we're just really focused on the workflow and the process. So there's a lot of systems engineering in there. And so that to me was a very satisfying answer, because that's really where the magic lies, is in the workflow and the process. Then to get to the dinner, he talked a little bit about suitability for automation. And what I really liked that he said, and I almost wanted to stop the conversation just to acknowledge him, but respect the skill of the workers and put robots in the right place. Because as we all know, there's nothing like physical manual labor over a long period of time to turn carpenters into GCs. right? It's kind of like when deer turn into elk, you know, that's always the joke up in Colorado in the mountains. And so this is saying that, you know what, robotics, we're not here to take your job. We're here to make your job better and to make it easier on your body. So I loved hearing that. And hopefully the tribe out there in AOC land will love hearing that as well too. Then the final piece, which I'll call dessert, was when Ula, as an engineer, admitted that he wasn't a designer, which is always beautiful to hear an engineer say that. But what he really talked about, I think he is a designer and he is creative because he put his finger on it and he said, you know what? What we're really creating is panels and boxes, right? So it's this orthogonal part system that create architecture. And what he talked about is how do you break that down and really put this responsibility solely back on the creative class, which is the architects, designers, and those GCs that have that gene, to say, how do you break that box down? And so we, you know, Devin, you know, we had a conversation, Art of Construction, with Audrey Grubesic, big shout out to her, on Offsite Dirt about architectural Jenga. And that's really what Ula was talking about, is architectural Jenga. So great podcast, great guest. Look forward to hearing more from him on the AMA series on Master Facilitator.
Whether you say Ula or Ola, you better understand what dialect and where you're coming, because these machines at the end of the day are speaking ones and zeros. But the psychology of the sale? Tribe, we're all humans just trying to figure this out. So why do you say, let's work towards all having a cheers and have one of the robots having given you a water, so when we go over to Ula or Ola, we have less kidney stones. Crush it out there, tribe.